You may not believe it, but an hour ago I was not this upbeat. It's like, oh, I got to get this show done. But my mind's all over the place. I got a lot of things on my mind and I got to get all that cleared out. I got to get a show going here. Now we're here. Now we're gathered up. I got the congregation here. Excited. I'm upbeat. Glad you're here with us for the 173rd installment of the Parish of the Patriots. If it happens to be your first time tuning in, we do have a Christian-specific segment about the halfway mark, roughly, second half of the show. Tune in, especially if you're a Christian believer, because that's who it's for. It isn't going to be anything like going into a regular church. It'll be much more fun and hopefully much more informative. But like going into a regular church, yes, we do volunteer. We do ask that you not be shy and pay your tithes. You know, we do pay. This is the part where I pass the plate around. You know, I should wait and pass the plate around at the end of the show. Anyway, that's how we do it. Pass the plate around. I had somebody ask me here just a little while back. Somebody told me, they said, you know, I've watched some of these preachers on TV. And I'm like, mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, how come every one of them keeps going on about how we got to support Israel? And I responded without like a hesitation, just like without even thinking about it. I said, well, because they're getting a check. It's like, this guy is on TV. He's got a suit that costs more than I make than I could make in months, you know, doing things like, you know, I found a little bit of scrap metal. I'm one step away from being that guy you see walking down the road picking up aluminum cans. You know, I mean, that's where I'm at, trying to make ends meet. He's got a suit that costs more than I can make in months. You know, a big mega church, fancy church. He's obviously doing really well financially. And he goes on TV to tell you, you need to make your government, be sure your government sends their billions and billions of dollars from Israel. I'm sorry, but for me, it ain't real hard to put two and two together. He's getting a check. That's where all that money comes from. But speaking of getting a check, I'm not getting any checks for that, obviously. So I just depend on you. We keeping it real here. I depend on the voluntary support of you, the listeners, and it is very much appreciated. We got Bitcoin, nice middle of the road. Monero, we have Monero back up. I got a brand new Monero address. I know for those of you who want to use Monero, I've had that down off of here for several weeks now. I apologize for that. I kind of wound up with a cluster. It's my own fault. Wound up with a cluster on that, but I have a brand new Monero address. Use that. That's going to be our go-to there as far as the Monero. This address is, we're good. I got that all ironed out. And it doesn't get any easier than snail mail. I don't have a credit card. I'm sorry. I don't have a way for you to support the show with credit card. I don't. It's funny because, you know, some folks want Monero because it's like ultimate, like, you know, anonymity. And I understand in the political climate. But then I have people that are like, I want to use a credit card, which is kind of funny because it's like the least anonymous way. It's like the opposite polar extreme non-anonymous way. You might as well make Parish of the Patriots bumper stickers. You drive around with that on your car. You know what I mean? It's like a broadcasting. But really, I mean, if you don't want to do any kind of cryptocurrency, I mean, it doesn't get any easier than snail mail. You know, write a check. Yeah, it's more anonymous to write a check and put it in the mail than it is to, that's more anonymous than using your credit card. So yeah, you know, or cash or whatever you want to put in the mail. Snail mail doesn't get any easier. I get the cryptocurrency, you know, can be intimidating for some people, but I'm sorry if you can't figure out how to fill out an envelope. I don't know what to tell you, but yeah, we do got the Monero back, got email address down there. All the instructions for that's at the bottom of the description page here on Radio Albion, and it is very much appreciated. Let's jump right into the listener supporter mailbag. It doesn't take too long. GPD, clown train keeps it rolling. Here's something for the plate. That's from Mr. T coming through for us every week. It is very much appreciated. The clown show doesn't stop. It keeps getting more clownish. You know, it amazes me, these people. You know, that they put out, these government people. You know, they had this deal, get together over there, you know, in the Asia region. And we send Lloyd Austin over there. And like his Chinese counterpart, you know, comes up to him and flat says, you know, we will go to war with you. We will go to war with you. We don't care the cost. We ain't sitting around worried about your sanctions. We ain't sitting around worrying about, you know, you're going to get a few licks in. You know, the guy who's ready to fight, IRL, the guy who's ready to fight, you know, the bluster doesn't matter. You see two guys, and you're thinking to yourself, they're fixing to get it on. The guy who's jumping around, and he's taking his shirt off, and he's like telling everybody how he's fixing to kick somebody's ass, that ain't the guy that's necessarily ready to fight. He's just doing that posture. Like you see these birds, and they fluff their feathers up, and they strut around. That's just the guy doing posture. The guy, whoever it is out of the two guys you see, that has already accepted the fact that he's going to get, the guy jumping around making all that noise, he's the one that has this movie idea of what he's fixing to do. I'm going to hit this guy, and he ain't even going to know what hit him. He's going to go down, and I'm going to do this like Rocky dance and jump around. But the guy who's actually accepted that, win or lose, somebody's going to get a few licks in. The guy that's accepted that he's going to get a few licks in, that he's going to get hit and he's ready for that, is the guy that's really ready to fight. The Chinese counterpart to Lloyd Austin tells him flat out, straight out, tells him, we will fight you. We will go to war over this Taiwan thing. We're telling you right now, y'all are playing this game. Do we look like we're playing a game to you? Because we ain't playing a game. We will go to war with you over this Taiwan thing. Y'all need to quit it. You keep coming up and say, we haven't changed our policy, but we're going to sell another several hundred million dollars worth of weapons to Taiwan so that they can fight Chinese aggression. But we're not technically saying that Taiwan isn't a part of China. They're just playing games. You have this Chinese military official, and he says, we will go to war with you. We don't care. We ain't scared of your sanctions. We don't care if our economy takes a hit. We don't care. Yeah, we know you're going to kill some of our dudes. Yep. And we will go to war with you. We don't care what it costs. Be ready for that. Y'all need to back off your crap. And they come right back out and he's just bluffing, because they're always bluffing. The clown show people think everybody's full of shit, just like they are. They're full of it. They sit there, don't mean anything they say. They're constantly blustering and bluffing around, and they think everybody else is doing that. So when the other guy says, we're ready to fight. Y'all want to come on? Let's do this, man. What are y'all dancing around for? He's just posturing. He's just posturing. It amazes me. These people, these government people, they act as though they're so stupid. They really act as though, like if you look at the Russian-Ukraine thing, they act as though we're really burning Putin in the media. Boy, howdy, we've banned all of anybody that, points anything remotely pro-Russian out. We've banned them from social media. We're winning. They think that, I said this sometime back. They act as though dealing with Russia and Putin is the same as like banning one of us off of Twitter or something. Yeah, we're making him look really bad in the press. Make him look really bad in the press. Meanwhile, they just keep doing their thing. These people, though, it's amazing, because they don't live connected to reality. They don't. They think that, if they're winning the social media war campaign on this, if they're winning the media campaign, that equates to winning. No, what equates to winning is whatever the military is doing on the ground at the time. They go, we're really making China look bad. We gave this speech and put up some posts on social media about how we were outraged and we accused China of some human rights violations. We're really making them look bad. Why, we got the U.S. media doing, they'll run any bad story about China. All we got to do is give them a call. They don't care. Matters is the other guy is like, we're ready to fight. Are you? I can tell you the U.S. ain't ready to fight. But like I say, these idiots act like, because they're full of it, because they're constantly blustering and bluffing. They probably think that when the Chinese military defense guy, department guy sits there and says that, they probably think, he's just saying that for domestic consumption. That's just for the media. There's no way he means that. Yes, he means that. Clown world keeps on rolling. GPD, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but what's up with all these shootings? Pray for me. I have health issues. God bless us from Triangle Whip. By the way, does our society remind you of the Weimar Republic? Yes, in very many ways. And yes, I will be sure and say a prayer for you, my friend. Now, what is up? What is up with all these shootings? It's just the right time. Yeah. That's not to say, you don't have to go full crisis actor and nothing really happened with all this. But you can look at these things and be like, man, some things don't add up. You know, I mean, really, you don't have to get way out there. It makes me mad sometimes when people get way out there with nothing to back it up, you know, because it just kind of discredits when people are pointing out real anomalies and things that we should have answers to. We're still waiting for the answer to the question on this Uvalde shooting. We're still waiting to hear where this guy got $6,000+ to buy all of this ammo and guns. I could tell you, my broke ass, if I wanted to go buy a bunch of guns and ammo, $6,000 worth, there's no way that's happening. You know, there's no way. And yet this 18-year-old high school dropout who's either unemployed or had a part-time job at a fast food joint, he manages to go buy it for cash. Where did the money come from? It seems like we should know that. It seems like it's relevant to the story, but apparently it is not. It is a real question that should be answered. I mean, there may be a legit answer, but it's awful funny to me that the media is not even the least bit curious. Not even the least bit curious about any of these things. Of course, my theory is they crawl over the internet and look for these mentally unstable loon people. They groom them. That's my theory. I've got nothing to back that up. But I mean, come on. and you know, excuse me. It's like you watch them. And which narrative they have these like templates they use. You know, they have these templates and you know, depending on the situation, they know what template to use. The shooter is a white guy, white supremacy. People have too much freedom on the internet. It's causing more white supremacy. That's the problem. Once again, we have this glaring example of the great threat of domestic terrorism from all of these white supremacists on the internet. If the shooter is non-white, then it's the gun control. We need the gun control. This is just strictly a gun control issue. And we have too many guns in this country. They have these ready-made templates. It's all BS. I don't know. You know, it's just, we're always lied to, you know. You don't have to get crazy with the conspiracy stuff, but you can have legitimate questions. And when you notice that they don't want to answer those, they're not even curious to ask the questions, much less answer them, then, you know, you have to wonder. You have to wonder what else is going on. Like I said, my personal theory is they're all over these Discord channels. They're all over the internet, you know, and they look for these people who are obviously not all there. Groomers. There's more than one kind of groomer. More than one kind of groomer. It's important to remember, you know, in these crazy times, you know, I mean, I was thinking of the meme, you know, you've probably seen it, you know, where the guy with the face, you know, the Wojak that's all, you know, his face is a whole mess. It's like, is this your greatest trial for me? And then Jesus is over here like, you know, you literally just need to put down the phone and go outside. You know, if you start feeling like the Wojak, put down the phone, go outside. There's still decent people out there. You know, they may not be, you know, politically in tuned to everything that you are. They don't need to be. Go talk to real people. Go visit with real people. Have a casual conversation, a normal casual conversation with real people. You don't have to talk about politics to realize that there are still regular, normal, decent people out there. You know, yes, they may not have a clue what is going on, you know, the Great Reset or whatever the hell else. Talk to real people. Get off the computer. Quit staring at your phone and get out there. have a real conversation with somebody about normal things. Except sports ball. I'm not going to have a normal conversation about sports ball with somebody. And they say, how about them Cowboys? What do you think Cowboys are going to do this year? I'm just going to sit there and go, I don't know. And the look on my face will say, it's funny because I was just doing the look. I was looking forward like I had a camera here. And this look, you know, the look on the face is, I don't know because I don't care. I'm going to talk about sports ball. But don't, dude, try to have regular conversations with regular people. There are decent people out there. Yes, the world is full of people that maybe aren't so decent. But there are decent people out there. Again, they may not have a clue about this political stuff, but it doesn't matter. They're still good people. They're still trying to live the best life they can. Can't get all black-pilled and just, you know, give up. Give up on everything. You can't do that. Speaking of good people, there are also the opposite of that. You know, I was thinking also this morning before recording the show, I was sitting here thinking about these so-called social justice warriors that don't fight for social justice. They don't. They fight for the narrative of the system. In this system that we live under, you spend your entire life basically as livestock. You're not treated as human beings. You are livestock. You may think otherwise, you know, especially if you're doing pretty well financially, you may be thinking, what do you mean livestock? What are you talking about? But we are. Our whole purpose of existing in this system is to generate some kind of wealth that can be skimmed off of us, whether through taxation or usury, insurance costs, all of these various things as skimmers, the rent seekers. And that's our whole reason for existing. And when you get down to the end of your life, they drag out your health. So you see, I used to say you spend your whole life being treated like that. And then when you get old, you're supposed to just shut up, die, go away. We don't want to deal with you anymore. But I realized that was incorrect. It was incorrect because then when you get old, they want to drag your life out just long enough so that anything you make, because see, you spend your whole life as livestock and they take taxes and they charge you insurance fees and premiums and interest rates on the loans you got to have so you can have a place to live and all that. And then if in spite of all that, you're still miraculously able to accumulate something. You see, you actually were able to buy a house and, you know, a few nice things, you know, not a lot, but you got a few nice things and you accumulated a house. When you get down now and you're old and really under normal natural circumstances, you'll probably just die. They drag your life out. You know, they have just enough medical technology to keep you alive so that they can just go ahead and get what anything else, strip mine anything else you may have collected in life. Strip that last asset for the healthcare industry. You know, going to have some inheritance tax. Can't have your kids inheriting anything. That would be horrible. You strip the last bit, the last penny out of you before they go ahead and charge your family thousands of dollars to finally put you in the ground. And then it's over. Your entire life is livestock. You treat it as livestock for the system. And yet, do any of these so-called social justice warriors, if they were really about social justice, they would look at this system and say, this is, people should be treated as human beings. People should be able to live their lives, contribute to society. And he's sitting there saying you should be able to sit around. You don't have to work at all. That's unbiblical. Of course, you have to work. I always think of when people who are knowledgeable in such things, you know, will talk about, you know, the real Middle Ages and things such as that and peasantry. And it's like, you know, people are, man, the peasantry, they were just worked to death. No, they weren't. Like, once the crops were done, they had all these, like, months of free time. That's how they wound up building all these cathedrals and stuff. It's because, well, we ain't doing nothing else. Let's build a cathedral. Let's build this big, fancy thing, you know, that'll last hundreds of years. We're not doing anything anyway. We've got this free time. If these social justice people cared anything, they would look and say, people should have like a purpose in life, not just to be treated like livestock, dehumanized. This shouldn't be, this is not right. If they were truly about social justice, they would point out these things like I just pointed out. Where people aren't treated with dignity in this world. They're treated as livestock to feed the system. Well, all these skimmers, all these rent seekers make money off of their labor. And now you're demanded to do more and more labor. Now they're robbing what little you might have left through the inflations. Rob you of your labor. You're not allowed to. And then now they come up with this great reset thing. They're just open about it. You'll own nothing and be happy about it because we're going to own everything. Where are the social justice warriors? If anybody should be upset about this great reset notion, it should be them. You got these people bragging that they're going to own everything. Because like I said, if you're going to own nothing, well, somebody's going to own it. That means it's going to be them. They're sitting there saying, we're going to own everything. These people running around. We got wealth inequality. Yeah. And now you got the ruling elites that say, we're going to own everything. The ultimate wealth inequality. We're going to own everything. You're going to own nothing. And you're going to be happy about it. Like it or not, you're going to be happy about it. And where are these people? They support the very people that promote this agenda. They run around instead of looking at real societal issues about the way people are treated. They run around and chase ghosts. That's what they do. No, they do. They run around and chase ghosts. They act like they're doing this great, valiant thing for society because they got someone banned off of Twitter that said something they didn't like. I'm a social justice warrior. Really, what have you accomplished? I got someone banned from Twitter. I even got a group together and found somebody and fired them from their job because they said something that I don't like. Really? Yes. What about, you know, I don't know, society strip mining assets from all the regular people so that this the concentrated elite at the top can be super wealthy and everybody else can be poor? No, I don't have time to think about that. Let me complain about the wage gap, the gender wage gap between men and women. Only, I don't know, can we say gender wage gap? Because, you know, that might imply, that might offend, that might be transphobic. I don't know. Let me run around and see what I'm supposed to be promoting right now. They're a joke. They're a real social justice warriors. They're anything but. There's virtue signalers for the system. While claiming to be like some kind. Oh, I'm so virtuous. The system, the system is inherently racist. The system treats people like livestock. Maybe you should be talking about that. Sickening. They just promote whatever the regime tells them to, whatever the system tells them, whatever the narrative is, whatever the media tells them to. I had to fish around for the word I was looking for. Whatever the media tells them to. Do you know why they were outraged over George Floyd? Because the media told them to be outraged about George Floyd. If the media, no, really, I mean that 100%. If the media never reported on George Floyd, they would have never been outraged about it. It's just because the media told them about it. That was their clue. That was their cue to go be outraged. You know, that's it. You've had any number of no-knock raids, which just don't even get me started on those. You know, people getting shot in no-knock raids. But if the media doesn't tell them, be outraged about that social justice warrior. I'm worried about that. I mean, they're outraged about what they're told to be outraged about. The media told him, George Floyd, this is something for you to be outraged about. And that's all that mattered. You know, and you have people running around going like, well, actually, he died of a fentanyl overdose. He didn't really, you know, he had fentanyl meth in his system. And like the coroner said, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You're telling them that. And that might be true. But you see, the media didn't tell them that. All that matters is what the media tells them. That is their general. If they're social justice warrior, then their commanding officer is general media. Whatever general media tells them, that's what they're going with. They're following orders, buddy. They're so individualistic that they lockstep follow orders. Whatever general media hands down to them, that is what orders they're going to carry out. That is the narrative they are going to fight for. That is the hill they are going to die on. The truth be damned. They don't care anything about the truth. They just care about the narrative, about whatever the media has told them. Their reward is a joke. Their reward is they tell each other what good people they are. Their reward is, you know, the media pats them on the back. Their reward is even if they commit unlawful acts, by and large, the government will look the other way. And yet they delude themselves. They pretend like they're some kind of, you know, I don't know, edgy fighters against the system when they're rewarded and protected by the system at every turn. It's such a sad state of affairs, and yet you can't help but to laugh. It is funny because when you watch these people that, they create, here's the thing, if you dedicate yourself to, trying to understand and know the truth, you want to dedicate yourself, try to understand, know, and seek the truth in your life. There are going to be times, like as you learn, because you build up a set, and I've said this before, I'm sorry for being a repeat, but you build up this set of beliefs based on the truth. But as you continue to learn, at some point, you're going to find little details over here that you were incorrect about, and you've got to adjust around for that. If you didn't do that, that would just make you a fool. You're like, well, nope, this is set. I don't care now that I have new information. I'm not adjusting. Only a fool would do that. You've got to adjust. You got to build on the truth. But you see, these people, and this is hard to understand because we do our best. I believe, I've got faith in y'all. That all y'all listen to this show, try to seek the truth and understand the truth as best you can. And it's hard from that perspective to understand these people that are like the opposite. They build up this lie and they refuse to accept anything that runs counter to the lie. So they have to make up, but yet, reality flies in the face of their lies. And so they have to constantly make up new lies to explain, the glaring irregularities, because the truth is pointing out the lie they've created in their narrative that they want to believe in, their set of beliefs. And so they build up these more and more ridiculous lies to explain that away instead of just going, well, obviously I'm not right about that. Take this, like, for instance, the narrative, women can do anything, the feminist narrative, women can do anything a man can do. I saw it on TV. Did you watch this latest movie? Why, this woman, she weighed like 110 pounds, which is very unique in America today. And she was kicking these guys' asses right and left. She did these guys, boy, she was getting back at them. And she just did all of these special, because she's had special training. You see, if a woman has special training, she can beat up any man. She's got to have the secret training. Even though she has the strength of a 12-year-old boy, she has the secret training. Which usually, by the way, if you're talking about American media consumption, usually means at some point the brilliant special training move of kicking a guy in the groin. Oh, she kicked him in the groin. It's the super finishing move. Because, no guy, after, by the time he's like 12, knows to expect that move. Those guys were caught completely unaware. They had no idea she might try to do that. But they do. They create this like lunatic narrative. A woman could do anything a man could do. Oh, okay. Well, then, why do we, have to have some kind of like affirmative action for women to, do these jobs in the military? Because they can't carry the stuff a man can do. Well, it's because of some sort of inherent, patriarchy, sexism, misogyny, BS. That's why I love transgenders in female sports. I think it's hilarious because you watch them twist themselves up because they're trying to support two different things here that fly in the face. A woman can do anything a man can do. Then they turn around and say, we shouldn't allow transgender women to be in cis women's sports. Well, why not? Well, because I don't want to say they're not real women, but at the same time, it's just not fair. Well, why is it not fair? I thought a woman could do anything a man could do, and these women are doing the special training. These women are doing the special training. They're professional, somewhat professional athletes or whatever, What do you mean? You watch the narratives just clash and collide and destroy one another. And they just keep trying. It doesn't matter how it flies in the face. A woman can do anything a man can do. Then there shouldn't be any problem with transgenders in women's sports, right? Wait. Let me think up a new lie to explain why this is a problem. Because it doesn't matter. It amazes me. If you're going to make anything out of your life, and what I mean by make anything out of your life, if you're going to grow as a person, You have got to be willing to admit you're wrong about something. You have got to be willing to say, man, I've got new information here. I've got to adjust. If you live your life to where like any, you are unable to do that, and anything that flies in the face of your current, your belief there of what you think how the world functions, no matter how factual it is, no matter how truthful it is, if you're unable to accept that and your answer to that is going to be just to build another lie to explain it away, you're just going to be ridiculous. I mean, you got to be willing to do that. You got to be willing to say, well, wait a minute. Maybe the reason women, there's a pay gap, a gender pay gap. Maybe it's because when you look at the data, women tend to like take a lot more time off of work and be a whole hell of a lot less productive. By and large, women just spend their time when they are at work stirring up some kind of BS drama. Maybe that's the problem. They're not being very productive and they take off all the time. Maybe that's why. You can't say that, you misogynist. Speaking of that, you always notice that they always just come back to name calling. I don't know. Like I said earlier, on Fridays, I do a show, Daily Nationalist with Finn Longshanks. And, you know, we always take a news story. And, you know, whenever it's about any kind of one of these topics, their defense of their position is never in data, is never in actual, like, factual things. Because if it were, you look at it and go, well, hey, they got a point here. It's always name calling. That is always what they've got. You can come at these stories and be like, well, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. Look at this. You know, a reasonable person would say, wow, yeah, that person's got a point. They've got data to back that up. What do you got? They're a misogynist. They're a white supremacist. That's Nazi thinking. Name calling. That's all they got because they can't back up their position with anything. They just got to call you names. They got to do the disqualify game. If you spend any time dealing with people, you notice that. Like online, you get in these online, or back when you could be on regular social media and you would interact with these people you watch and you confront them with the truth about their, you know, ignorant, lying, you know, point of view, you know, their untruthful view of the world based on a lie. And their response is always to immediately go to some kind of disqualify. You can count on it. Your opinion doesn't count. It doesn't matter where your data came from. It doesn't matter how accurate it is. It doesn't matter. Because you are fill in the blank. And because you are fill in the blank, none of what you say matters. You've been disqualified. Sorry. We can't listen to what you have to say. Of course, now we see that implemented on a grand scale. Everybody's being banned from everything. You know, everybody's been disqualified, you see, because they've had to build bigger and bigger lies to support their stupid made up narrative, this bubble world they live in. They've had to build up greater and greater lies. So they've had to go to greater and greater extremes of banning people that are allowed to point out, you know, the foolishness, the inconsistencies in their worldview. When somebody's answer is just shut up. And you're not allowed to say that, and you're a bad person, so we shouldn't have to listen to you other than defend their position on the merits of that, this, you know, position. You know what you're dealing with.
A brave social justice warrior.
If these people weren't so insufferable, I'd honestly feel sorry for them. I can't imagine, like, you know, what you're allowed, how you're allowed, how you allow yourself to view the world being this ever-shifting thing with no kind of substance to it. I think that'd be a miserable way to live. You know, really, I do. I think that'd be a miserable way to live. At least, you know, I mean, yeah, if your worldview is based on truth and you seek and speak the truth, you know, yeah, you're persecuted by the world on some level or another. But imagine living your life like supporting the lies, and it's like it's constantly like tomorrow, like things that you were saying last week could be brought up this week to say you too are a disqualified evil person, because now that's not allowed to be said. You're not allowed to say that anymore. See, now this week that's a bad thing because it's always changing. It's not based on anything. See, truth is fundamental. It doesn't change. It doesn't shift. It just remains. You know, if there's a mountain over there, that mountain is there. doesn't shift and change. But if there's fog over there, by the time you get over there to it, it might be lifted. The sun might be burning it off and the fog dissipates. That's the difference. The truth is a mountain that stays there. It just doesn't move around. Where the fog comes and goes, it shifts over here. The wind blows and now it's not over there. It's over here. So you got to go chase it over there. And then that's how these people live. You know, their worldview is always shifting and changing because it's not based on anything real. It's like, I don't know, a fog idealism or fog belief. Anyway, well, that's be grateful. That's not the way we live. We live on the mountain of truth. We seek the truth. We might have to adjust. We might get things wrong and realize that and get new information and shift. And that's all well and good. But at least we ain't running around out there chasing the fog. Anyway, speaking of pursuing the truth, I'm looking at the time. We got to get in here. You know, we got to get going with the Christian specific segment. So hopefully, like I say, if you're new and this is your first time listening, don't tune out. I think you'll get something out of it. Hopefully you will. It's unique. It's why we have the congregation comes back every week, I think, for this part. So, yeah, you know, like I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So this week, we're going to jump right in, start right off. I want to read from our Bible here. We're going to do Luke 16, verses 19 through 31, which will basically take us to the end of that chapter. This is the entirety of what we're reading here is being spoken by Jesus. There was a certain rich man, which was clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores, and it came to pass that the beggar died, and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried, and in hell he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water, and cool my tongue, for I'm tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And beside all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. Then he said, I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come into this place of torment. Abraham saith unto him, They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto him, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. I was remembering a story that was relayed to me many years ago by somebody, and they knew a rich man, and the discussion of religion and God came up with this rich man, and the rich man responded. In a mocking, you know, basically mocking and saying that religion and that God stuff, that's for the poor. That's for poor people to give them hope. The rich man said, I have money. I don't have to have all that. I can pretty much, you know, get and do what I want to do. I've got money. But all that religion and God stuff that's for poor people. You know, that's just something made up for poor people so that they have some hope in life. Now, the story is relayed to me, occurred many, many years ago, and I'm sure the rich man is now long dead. And as I recall hearing this story, I can't help but think of the story we just read, the example we were just given by Jesus of the rich man and Lazarus the beggar. Just as the rich man who says that, you know, God and religion and these things, that's for poor people. And I was thinking where you put your hope, you know, I mean, because here's the thing. It's mockery, and the guy's response really sounds kind of offensive on the surface. But at the end of the day, he's not necessarily wrong. Religion, God, seeking the Lord. That's for poor people to give them hope. I don't have that. My hope is in my wealth. See, I don't have to worry about, how I'm going to pay my bills or being able to do what I want to do because I have wealth. I have money. The rich man puts his faith and hope in those things. And the return is right now. The payoff is right now. When he says religion and faith and learning about God is for poor people to give them hope. Like I say, it's offensive, but it's not necessarily wrong. We have to remember that the disciples were astonished when Jesus said it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And they were like, how can this be? But it actually makes sense. The rich man's hope is in what he has now. I mean, his faith is in his wealth that he's got right now in this world. And he enjoys that in this world. The thing is, no matter how much wealth he has, it will be taken from him. I mean, you can't say it's a misplaced thing. He's misplacing, that which he puts his strength in, because he's getting it right now. It's the instant payoff. People mock people that don't plan for the future. It's like, you don't have a long enough time preference. Somebody with money and a good retirement looks at somebody else who doesn't have those things and says, well, that's your own fault. You should have planned ahead. I could see any number of people doing that. I have plenty of money in the bank. I've got my retirement set up and, I'm set for the rest of my life. You, on the other hand, are an idiot. You didn't do those things. But here's the thing. That will be taken away. It's a misplaced hope in the sense that it's guaranteed that you are going to lose that. Whenever you look at people now, these prominent people that run around and hold on to power, and they look like they're, 180 years old or whatever, they've got to be living off of blood transfusions from infants or something, because they just they look horrible, and yet they're still getting around, they're still alive. It's observable that they cling to this life. I mean, just like somebody just clinging to a piece of driftwood in the ocean. And it makes sense, because their only hope is in what they have now in this life, in the wealth and power that they have now in this life. But they will lose it. Everybody leaves everything they ever got in this life behind when they leave this world. Everybody leaves this world. It's just how the system works. You will leave this world, you'll leave everything behind. So what they put their hope and faith in is going to be gone. So in other words, somebody may say, I'm smarter than you because I've planned ahead. But did they? Did they plan beyond their death? I have money saved up. I've got a retirement. I've got a pension. Whatever the case may be. I've got these things. I planned ahead for the rest of my life. Great. Have you planned ahead for after that? Huh? Have you planned ahead for eternity? When you leave this realm, and all that stuff that you saved up for the rest of your life is gone now. Have you invested anything in that? In our story here, Lazarus is stuck there in such a pathetic state that the dogs took pity on him, would like hang around, come around, lick his sores, because he's in such a bad state. And he was placed there at the rich man's gate, so that he was hoping, the rich man could share a little bit of the love, have a little bit of charity towards him and help his situation. And he was there, apparently, for quite some time. And yet the rich man went on with his life. It didn't affect him any. I could imagine the rich man was probably like, well, it's probably his own fault that he's there. That's what he gets. Maybe he did something wrong. Maybe that's why he's there. I don't know. I got to go on with my life. Maybe if he was as smart as me, maybe if he was as financially savvy as me, maybe if he had planned ahead as well as I did, he wouldn't be a beggar laying in the gate hoping that I might drop a few crumbs his way. should have planned ahead. He should have had a longer time preference. And yet, when the ultimate long time preference comes about, when everything you have in this life is inevitably taken away from you, and now we're told in the story that Jesus just gave to us, now the script is flipped. And Abraham says, well, in his whole life, Lazarus had evil things. He laid around covered in sores and utter and horrible poverty. And you got to live the good life, and you got to enjoy that. You got to enjoy it. You relished it. That's where you put your faith and hope. Because, the religion stuff, that's for poor people to give them hope. You didn't need that. You didn't need anything to give you hope in this temporal life. You were able to live the good life. You had good clothes. You had plenty of food. You had wealth. People respected you. You were in good shape. You didn't need religion because you had everything you needed. Now that those things have been taken away from you and you seek that which you never had, you cannot seek that which you were unwilling to try to gain when the time was there. When we're here on this earth, when we're in this temporal realm, that is our time to seek those things, to plant the seed, to invest in our eternal life. And if you do not do that, as the rich man did not in the story Jesus has told us, then there's nothing to be gained. If you had a field and it was your job to plant wheat in that field so that when the harvest came, you could get the wheat out of the field. And you looked over there at your neighbor and you're like shaking your head, like, look at that fool. He's out there plowing and he's planting and sweating out in the sun. I don't need to do that. I'm sitting in the shade. I'm good to go. I don't really need to do all that. He's a fool. That's just something to keep him busy. But when the time comes when you have to harvest and your field didn't plant any wheat in it, you ain't getting no wheat. You can't reap that which you didn't sow. You always hear that from the Bible. You reap that which you sow. You've always heard that your whole life. You reap what you sow. But the flip side of that is if you don't sow anything, you ain't reaping nothing. If you haven't invested anything in understanding and learning and trying to grow spiritually and trying to put your faith in God, when the time comes to harvest, in other words, when you die, and you will die, you ain't got nothing to harvest. You ain't got no wheat in the field. The big boss man comes around and says, I'm here to see what kind of wheat crop you made. And your neighbor's over there going, well, I've got 48 bushels. We got 48 bushels of wheat, master. I think for the amount of land I had, it's okay. And the master nods his head and says, that's good. It looks like pretty fine wheat, too. And then the master shows up at your place. He's like, how much wheat? I don't got no wheat. What you talking about wheat? I didn't need that. I there was no need because I didn't need to eat any wheat. I had plenty. I was good to go. The master comes to give an account and you ain't got no wheat planted. You can't harvest that which you didn't plant. Yeah, you reap what you sow. And if you don't sow anything, you ain't reaping nothing. it is. It's funny because we always think of that. You reap what you sow. And we always think of it in the negative. Like if you do bad things are going to come around. Like another version of talking about karma. But we never think of it on the flip side, do we? You can't harvest what you don't plant. It don't work that way. Ain't nothing going to come up if you don't try, if you don't plant anything. You reap what you sow, and if you don't sow anything, you ain't reaping nothing. It ain't enough that you just maybe didn't do really awful things. I mean, we're not told in the story here of Lazarus and the rich man. I mean, we're not really told that the rich man was, like, mean or anything, We're not told that, every day when he walked past Lazarus, he'd spit on him and kick him and do really ugly things, and we're not told that. I'm left just with what information we're given that he was just more or less kind of just ignored him. Like, he was a non-entity. He's like, I don't see you. Like, I'm not making eye contact. Oh, God, the beggar's in the gate. Don't make any. Don't look over there. We're just going to walk on. Going to walk on by. It's going to walk on by. The bottom line is the rich man didn't need that stuff. His life was fine. And again, just in the context of this temporary time we have on this earth, when the rich man says, I don't need that stuff, that's for poor people, he's not entirely wrong. It's offensive because we're probably poor people, but it's not entirely wrong. Anyway, I think the thing to remember is that everything in this life, whether good or bad, is temporary. Now, when you're going through hard time, I mean, if you look at Lazarus the beggar, I mean, he was in a horrible, pathetic state. I mean, his life was awful. You might think you got it bad, but you ain't just laying on the ground begging and you know, with weeping sores all over you. But that too was temporary. Everything in this life is temporary. And it's true that for those who are suffering and those who are having a hard time and for poor people, there's a certain amount of comfort that this isn't going to last. This is temporary. No matter what the situation, no matter how much you're persecuted, no matter how, what kind of trials you're going through, what kind of torment you're going through, what kind of struggles you're going through. For the poor man, he thinks to himself, at least this is temporary. This too will pass. And you can say that with confidence because at some point you're going to die. Even if it drags on for your whole life, you will die. Everything in this realm ends. If you're on death row or given a lifetime prison sentence, you could take comfort that at some point in time you're going to die. This will be over. It is temporary. If you were suffering from whatever, this is temporary. This too will pass. And it's easier to really recognize that truth. It is when you're going through negative things, when your life isn't all, you know, sunshine and roses. When you don't have great wealth to put your hope on and living a life of comfort, it is a hope for somebody who's in a struggling position. This is temporary. This is going to pass. This ain't going to last. It's really bad, but it's not going to last. But likewise, for somebody living in comfort, somebody that, you know, for the rich man that has the wealth, it's really hard for them to look and accept that truth. That this is temporary and you're going to be poor. You're going to have nothing at the end of it because you can't take any of it with you. It's really hard for them to grasp that. It's really hard for them to accept that. When you're having good stuff, you don't. When things are bad, you want to believe this is just temporary. This ain't going to go on like this is forever. But when things are good, you want to believe that it's going to go on forever. It might not go on forever, but it's going to go on for a really long time. Or not. Everything is a blink of an eye. If from the eternal perspective, it's not. This too will pass. And all that you put your hope in and all that you put your faith in will be gone. If your faith and hope are in the things of this world, it is a guaranteed dead-end path. Enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it while you can if you have those things, but it will be gone. It will be taken from. It is a hope that is guaranteed to fail you. It might get you through this life, but to what end? When this life is over, it can do you no more good, and there are no do-overs. It's gone. It ain't coming back. It is a faith in something that is guaranteed to fail. Imagine if I sold you a car and you said, is this car good? I said, well, this car is good right now. But at some point in time, this car is going to blow up with you in it. You would be like, what? That don't sound like a good car to me. You put your faith and hope in this wealth and the things of this world, and it's guaranteed to fail you. It will end. It might carry you through this life, but it ain't going to do anything for your next life. And now, unlike like for the for Lazarus the beggar, while he had at least the notion, the comfort and the idea and the and the thought and the understanding that this is all temporary and it will end. And his misery did end on this life, and he was carried up to Abraham's bosom. He was carried up out of this torment to be comforted. Once you enter that realm, you don't get that comfort. The rich man now in torments, plural, now in torments, he doesn't have the comfort of that Lazarus had, that at least this too will pass. This is at least this will end at some point. Because there is no end. There is no time, so there's no beginning and end. He's just there, existing in torments. And there's no going back now. Like, well, I want to go back and do this differently now. You know, now that I know. And this, too, is somewhat reflected in at the end of the story. It was like, well, at least have him go and warm my brothers. At least have him warm my brothers. He's like, well, he's got Moses. Your brothers already have Moses and the prophets. If they follow all that, they'll do okay. Now, but if somebody comes back from the dead, they'll really listen. Notice the rhyming there. Even if somebody comes back from the dead, they won't repent. They won't listen because their hope and their faith is in these temporary things. As we get ready to wrap up, if you have wealth, you know, if you have wealth and you're set pretty good in this life, It's going to be really easy to be tempted to really actually put your faith in that. You know, you have less motivation to seek the Lord and to put the effort in to grow spiritually. If you're poor, you're looking for hope. That's why I said early on that statement that's for poor people isn't necessarily wrong, because poor people are already driven for some kind of hope, some kind of hope that things are going to get better. A poor person is going to have more motivation to try to seek the Lord and to grow spiritually. This is why for the rich man, you got to put in, you got to make the conscious effort, because you're not going to have that motivation, that driving fire. Everything's pretty good right now. A snapshot reflection of that would be if you look at the current system that persecutes any sort of political dissident. You know, any sort of speaking the truth against this current disorder and chaos, you know, is met with different varying levels of persecution, you know. And so somebody facing that, you know, you're not exactly praying that the system can go on. You're thinking this system is going to collapse under its own weight, and good when it does. The system hates truth and persecutes truth tellers. They persecute any and all dissent. And yet, if you're somebody living a comfortable life right now here in America, if you're living a comfortable life, and you might look around and you might see that, man, this government's bad. You know, I mean, this is bad. The systems, man, they're coming down on people. They ain't even, you know, doing anything. They're just disagreeing with the government. They're just disagreeing with this BS narrative they're giving us. But at the same time, you're still probably going to be, you know, your answer to that is going to be something like, you know, pray for, you know, put a sign up, pray for America, God bless America, you know, you God forgive, God save America. Even though America is observably, you know, completely just taken over with wickedness. In other words, when you see somebody have that reaction, they're not really praying for America. They're praying for, I want to keep my stuff. You know, their thought is, you know, a poor man that looks at this, a poor man who's persecuted for speaking the truth, for being a dissident against the system, for speaking the truth, he takes hope in the fact that this system will collapse and then they can't be messing with everybody anymore. But for the man that has wealth, he looks at the system, and even though he might acknowledge it's a wicked and disgusting system that just promotes every kind of degeneracy and evil, at the end of the day, he's like, yeah, but if this system collapses, what happens to my money? What happens to my property values? What happens to my wealth? What happens to those things that I have put my hope and faith in? I've got a pension. I've saved up so that I can live out my whole life here in relative comfort. What about all the things, you know, what about my summer home? that person is going to be not really wanting the system to collapse. They want the status quo to stay in place, no matter how wicked and how evil the status quo is. Even if someone were to come back from the dead to warn them. You see, it all kind of fits together. If somebody comes back from the dead, they'll listen. No, they won't, because they're locked in. They're locked in to they're committed to the system. Their hope and their faith is in the things of this world. We wrap up on that. No, hopefully you got so many things you can learn. Just, you know, a little short story that Jesus told, and there's so much we can get from it. So much we can learn from it. And I hope you got something out of hearing it. I enjoy this segment a lot. You know, I enjoy the whole show. I really do. I enjoy these talks we have. I have fun doing the shows. A lot of work. More work goes into these things than you might think. But, I mean, I enjoy doing the whole show. I really, the Christian specific segment is the driving reason for the show, though. If, you know, for some reason, I couldn't do the Christian specific segment any longer. You know, it's like, you can just make an hour show of rambling about whatever it is you ramble about in the first part of the show. Then I wouldn't bother. I mean, this is the reason du jour for doing this show. It really is. And again, I hopefully you get something out of it. I feel like I get something out of it when we have these discussions. But anyway, we're going to get on out of here. Once again, thank you. Those of you, don't be shy. Pay your tithes. It really does make a difference for me. And you know, it really, really is appreciated. Drop something in the plate. You know, don't just be just thumping the bottom of the plate. It is very much appreciated. Also, don't forget, I am on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist. Always a short, fun discussion, you know, 30-minute show. You want to tune in for that. We usually try to have something kind of lighthearted to end your week up, nothing too heavy. So be sure and catch that. And as always, come back and catch us here next Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots.